I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Sheila Dixon was Baltimore's 48th mayor. She came into office in 2007, but resigned in February 2010 after she was convicted in Baltimore Circuit Court of stealing gift cards intended for the poor. After the embezzlement conviction, she agreed to perform 500 hours of community service and paid $45,000 to charity. Her probation ended. Dixon now wants her old job back, challenging a one-time ally, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, at a critical time for the city. Dixon says lack of leadership and accountability at City Hall are to blame for Baltimore's problems. Can voters overlook Dixon's conviction 5 years ago and support her political comeback? Sheila Dixon is our guest in this first hour of Midday. Phone lines will be open for questions from our listeners. Midday begins after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us on WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick Hagerstown, WYPO Ocean City and the Eastern Shore of Maryland, streaming live online through WYPR.org. We thank you again for making Midday part of your day. Two-hour show, as usual. In the second hour today, a look back 10 years to Hurricane Katrina and the devastation it brought to the city of New Orleans. But an interesting take on that story. Roberta Brandis-Gratz is a journalist, an author, an urban critic, and she has a property in New Orleans. She's written a book about New Orleans' recovery from Hurricane Katrina. It's called We're Still Here, You Bastards, and she's going to join us in the second hour of our show today. In this first hour of the show, we welcome to Midday Sheila Dixon, who was Baltimore's mayor until 2010. She has now announced that she wants to run for that office again and this year. Nice to have you on the show. Thank you for being here, Sheila Dixon.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm curious, after the conviction in 2010, which I described in the introduction of the show here, people within a year or so were saying, well, she may run for office again. Sheila Dixon may want to be mayor again. So I wanted to ask you about the timing of all this. Are you running for mayor again because of things that have happened this year in Baltimore, or would you be running anyway? Were you thinking of running for mayor anyway, Freddie Gray or not, riots or not?
I was thinking, and people were encouraging me, and people were stopping me on the streets, and people were emailing me and texting me and yelling out their cars ever since I left office.
And so,
the decision wasn't based on the incident that happened.
So
My poll was before the incident that happened.
You mean this year? The riot?
Yes.
You're referring to that. So, okay. So let me ask you something then. Why do you want to be mayor again? And what makes you think you could do a better job than Stephanie Rawlings Blake?
Well, let me say this. I know that in my tenure, not only as mayor, but city council president on the city council, growing up here in Baltimore, I mean, I love this city. I was very committed. I'm very committed. I know that that's my calling, a public servant. And it was proven by the great results that I had in this city. I had a great pulse of this city. I had a great sense of the diversity in the city and how we need to work to balance, to make the city stronger, more powerful, rebuild, revive certain areas. And I believe that not only did I do a good job as mayor and when I was city council president and on the city council, but I also have a very good sense and a great vision for where we need to go. I don't want to do this forever, but I believe right now we need someone who can come in, hit the ground running, not take 2 years of a learning curve, because we have a lot of challenging issues that need immediate results, and people need to feel that they have a city government that's not only committed, but that's using the taxpayers' dollars wisely, but also working on initiatives that are going to have results. You know, there are a lot of systemic issues that impact our city. A lot of times public officials don't want to deal with systemic things because that's long term. And in hindsight, if the current administration had to build on some of those initiatives that I put in place, I don't believe we would be in the situation we're in.
Well, I'll give you time to talk about that in this hour. But I wanted to say this. People also must feel a need to trust their elected officials, especially the mayor, the highest office in the city. So what do you say to people who say, well, I can't trust her again? She had an opportunity. She blew it. I know it was just $530 in gift cards intended for poor children or whatever it was. She served her time. I recognize that. But she paid her dues on this, but I can't trust her again. So what do you say to people like that?
Well, I've had people who ask me that question. And first and foremost, you know, I made some really personal bad choices. And as relates to the gift cards, and gift cards did go to needy kids. I should have disclosed some things that I didn't. And I know that the learning experience from that bad choice and decision, it never affected my ability and what I did in running the city. I had to do a lot of consolation with myself, with my God. I had to go to my family for forgiveness. And I've come to the citizens for forgiveness. And this is not the first that I've apologized to the citizens, even though people think.
I said in my column, and others have said, they didn't hear clearly from you an apology until this year when you said you wanted to run for mayor again. Did you? I mean, I missed it. I looked.
Well, I did an interview maybe a year after I got out of public office with your producer,
Melody Simmons.
Melanie, and talked, and we had a dialogue with an apology. I also, in every setting, I mean, of course, I hadn't gone on TV or radio shows. But I did apologize,
I read that. I have it here. Melody Simmons was writing then for the Daily Record.
Right.
She's now a producer on Midday.
Yeah.
And she's quoted you as saying, "I disappointed the city, my family, and myself. I try to apologize every day in how I'm living my life out. Hopefully people realize that I am sorry for some of my decisions." Well, that's different than saying, you know, I did something wrong. I shouldn't have done this. This is what I did wrong. I own up to it. You feel like that's a clear apology. Others didn't feel it was so clear, including me. And then there was an interview in, I don't know, earlier this year with Vic Carter at mm-hmm. Channel 13. Mm-hmm.
They've been gone. They've been, last 3 years they wanted to have a one-on-one.
Okay. I mean, even that interview, it didn't seem clear to me that you were really apologizing. You were apologizing for how you kind of inconvenienced us all, not for what you actually did.
Well, I think that I have apologized.
Okay. You think that's sufficient?
And I believe that the citizens of Baltimore can trust me. That is not who I was, and that's not who I am.
Okay. So during this hour, we'll take some calls and questions from our listeners here. We welcome your input. 410-662-8780 while Sheila Dixon is with us here in the studio for the hour. The email address for Midday, midday@wypr.org. Let's go over then what you would offer the city going forward here. And you said there are some differences between you and Stephanie Rawlings Blake, some things that you started when you were mayor that you wish she had continued and that you said in an op-ed in the Baltimore Sun, are to blame for the problems Baltimore is experiencing now. What were those things?
Well, let's look at the crime. Under the O'Malley administration, that was his whole political effort in reducing crime, zero tolerance, bringing in maybe four commissioners during his tenure. You know, I watched that. I looked at that. I saw where things needed to change. I observed. When I attended conferences, meetings in other cities, I looked at what was going on, and particularly in New York. When I put together our crime plan, I looked at it comprehensively. And that's why I chose Commissioner Bielefeld. You know, my staff, I'll never forget this day. There were people who wanted me to select Bielefeld, and there was people who wanted me to select the commissioner from D.C. And it was a real challenge. But I knew that the plan that we wanted to put in place had to address quality of life. We had to go after the most violent offenders. We needed to get a control of our guns, and that's why we created the gun registry, and that's why our officers with our other partners would go and knock on doors of individuals who had been arrested as a result of illegal guns to find out what was going on with them, how could we help them, and then systemic issues that impact our cities. Getting our officers out of the cars, in the communities, engage with our community so that that trust could be gained back. And then also the training of our officers, you know, giving them the kind of training where they understood the sensitivities of what was going on in the communities and neighborhoods, and also working with our constituents.
When you were city council president before you were mayor, and Martin O'Malley was mayor before he became governor of Maryland, we had what's called zero tolerance policing in Baltimore City. Thousands and thousands of arrests, 100,000 arrests in a couple of years there during his time. How did you feel about that? And if you had misgivings about it, did you ever express that to the mayor?
I did. And first of all, I did not believe in zero tolerance because I did not believe that you can arrest your way out of this. I mean, we have to reach people where they are. And we have a ongoing drug problem in this community that's a huge market. And no, I didn't believe, and I had talked to Martin about some of his initiatives, and zero tolerance was one. Did I go out and do a press conference, you know, about that? No, but we did have discussions on it. I was, you know, a city council president and working with our public safety committee. We were beginning to try to work on initiatives. So, yes,
well,
that's why I changed.
That's why you changed the Bielefeld.
That's why I also changed the whole strategy and began to really try to, one, maintain our officers longer, because our experienced officers are needed to train younger officers, to build our classes up so we can recruit more officers.
Okay, so what's different under Stephanie Rawlings-Blake then? Besides the fact that she lost Fred Bielefeld to early retirement, some of us wish Bielefeld was
still around.
The
question is, what is the plan? I mean, I talk to officers and I ask them, what's the vision, what's the plan for the police department? And every day, officers that I've spoken with said that one day you do one thing and another day you do another. It has not been clear.
We've had change of leadership, too.
But also the vision hasn't been clear. The clear of zero tolerance as relates to violent offenders and really focusing on that with our partners, the state's attorney's office, our partners at the state and federal. What are we doing to get guns off the street? What is our effort in really focusing on the gun effort? You know, we had a whole gun stat where we were looking at what was happening in Virginia at gun shows and who was buying guns. We were really trying to focus on not just have a buyback gun day to give people something.
Let me ask you this.
And then, again.
You bring up the police. I want to ask you something.
But wait a minute. Let me just say this. It's okay for police to sit in their car, but it's even better when he's walking around or she's walking around in the neighborhood, getting to know the neighbors, getting to see what's going on. You have a whole different perspective. What do you do sitting in a car? Just because of that presence of that police car there, the individual block away is going to continue to do what they're doing. They need to see you. They need to know that you're there.
Given the surge of violence that we've seen since the death of Freddie Gray and the riot since May, June, July now, Baltimore's on a pace to have a year of homicides we haven't seen since Kurt Schmoke was mayor in the 1990s. And now we have a report in The Sun over the weekend about robberies being up at a five-year high and robbery closure rate at a five-year low.
Don't talk to me about robberies.
Well I'm going to ask you.
Only
I had a
couple at my own home.
All right. Well, I want to ask you this, though. Do you think the police are taking a knee? Do you think the police are laying back, not doing their jobs since the indictment of the six officers?
I don't think that police officers are not doing their jobs. I do believe they are doing their jobs, but I think that in some cases, depending on the environment that they're in and where they're located and what they're called to do, they are cautious, which is not necessarily the best thing. Because when you go to do an arrest to someone who's committing a crime and you have 50 people around you with cameras and TV, phone cameras taking pictures, it's impossible to do your job.
You don't think it's possible that some officers just resent so much the indictments of the six?
That probably is the case, but I don't think that that's the case. I stop officers. Some of them know who I am when I stop them and ask them. You know, I ask them straight up. I'm like, are you doing your job? What is it going to take? Yeah, they want to have the support and the backing, and I believe that most of our officers are still truly committed in fighting crime. But they have to have a clear vision. They have to know what it is that the police department wants them to do outside of their responsibilities, the day-to-day that they need to do.
Sheila Dixon is our guest on the Midday Show. 410-662-8780 is a phone number if you have a question for her or something you'd like to say to the former mayor who wants to be mayor again. our email address. I'll take questions that way and read your email on the air. I already have a few to read for Sheila Dixon. It's midday@wypr.org. Take calls in just a second. 410-662-8780. Sheila Dixon is our guest, former mayor of Baltimore, who wants to be mayor again. When I was asking you before about, you know, your desire to become mayor again, you mentioned that people see you on the street or text message you, or you frequently hear people say, run again. But who are they? Who specifically? Like your old backers, people who wrote checks for you in the past.
No. I'm speaking about people that I don't even know their names. I'm not talking about people, friends of mine.
Or what about the old crowd that, you know, actually contributed to your campaigns? Have you talked to them?
I've talked to them since I made announcements in some cases.
How do they feel? These are folks who gave you money to run for office before.
There are some that still support me.
And there's some that say they were...
Let me put it this way. I haven't gotten a no yet.
You haven't gotten a no yet.
Right.
Okay.
But I know this is going to take, you know, rolling up my sleeves, grassroots, hitting the streets, which I'm already used to doing anyway, from the time I entered office.
What else is the mayor doing wrong, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, that she should have carried over? You say she should have carried over some policies from your tenure.
Consistency. She went through 4 chiefs of staff. CityStat. You know, I had challenges with CityStat under Martin, and he knew it. But I knew it was a tool to use to assess and evaluate and be able to set objectives. It's a great tool, and we used it to maximize and make sure that our agencies were working together. I mean, going through staff and depleting agencies and experienced people can really weaken your administration and your departments.
When she was city council president, you were mayor, or when she was in city council and you were city council president, if you look over the record of the two of you, you know, you seem to be in agreement on a lot of things when it comes to policy over the years. So I just wonder, where is the difference between the two of you?
When you say policies over the
years... Yeah, and the things you voted for, your voting records. We've looked at that.
You also have to understand that you have to have agencies that are functioning in a manner that's going to be professional, that's going to be responsive to your constituents, because the taxpayers is who we work for. And what I'm saying is that in a lot of cases, a lot of efforts of things going on, just basic services are not being done.
We were trying
to clean up the city to make it cleaner, greener, healthier, safer. And the city started looking really dirty. I mean, I'm obsessed with that. I think the appearance of your city and what it looks like really is reflected of city government. And the city went back to being dirty, the dumping, the trash in alleys. I mean, I know we changed the trash days from one recycling and one trash day, but we also focused on those other days that those individuals weren't working, picking up trash, that they were in those alleys, working with those neighborhoods, cleaning them up, et cetera.
Well, that's still the same. The schedule is still the same.
Well, the schedule might be the same, but I don't think all that extra work is happening in those neighborhoods.
We'll go to the phone lines for Sheila Dixon. Again, the phone number 410-662-8780. Barry's the first caller. Go right ahead, Barry. You're on with Sheila Dixon.
Hi. I wanted to talk about trash because I think that the west side of Baltimore outside of downtown is atrocious. And the trucks that just drive around once a week, they're ineffective, to put it bluntly. But one of the things that I find I'm a bit resentful for is that I'm a Baltimore City resident, long time, have always lived in the city. But when this new initiative comes around of bringing in new residents, and it kind of slaps me in my face, I've been here. I've been in the neighborhoods. I'm waiting to see the payback from the days of Mayor Schaefer when he said we'll work on the harbor first and then we'll roll out to the neighborhoods. I've never seen the rollout to the neighborhoods. It's gorgeous downtown in Canton and Fells Point and Federal Hill. It is not gorgeous in my neighborhood.
All right, Barry, go ahead.
Well, you don't have to tell me your street, but what part of West Baltimore do you live in?
I live off of Hilton in Windsor Hills. And I still have to drive out to the county just to get basic services. The strip malls are awful. The trash is atrocious. Walbrook Junction, most of the people in my neighborhood don't go to Walbrook Junction to do any of their services simply because there's nothing there. The business owners are saying they're being squeezed on both sides with the taxes.
So, Barry, hold on. I appreciate you describing all this, and I was just out there on Saturday. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know the area.
Do you have a question for Sheila Dixon, though?
Sure. Can money be put back into Department of Public Works just to clean the place up?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, we can use what we currently have to clean up that area, and I don't disagree with what you're saying. It's all in how you use those services and those sanitation workers. When they're not picking up trash, there are other days where they need to be out there in those neighborhoods cleaning up in those problem areas where they're dumping problems. But, you know, but it's also a collective effort. Neighbors have to get out and clean. I was in Greenville this weekend for a wedding. And I hadn't been there in a number of years, and I was in the downtown area, but it was a downtown area that was right on the side of a residential neighborhood. And just to see all the recycling containers that are out on the street in the public walkway, the containers where you can put your cigarette butts in, it was you could see that it was a green and clean city. I took a lot of pictures. I got a lot of good ideas because I am with you. I'm obsessed with it. We should have in West Baltimore, Walbrook Junction. That's why Emerson Village with the new development at Upton that's moving slowly. We need to change that shopping area as well to be more attractive.
Is this something where CityStat could have helped?
Cities that definitely can help in
on,
that.
On trash,
oh, yeah. Oh,
reporting of trash.
Track. Yes, because you track to see where your calls are coming in, where your issues are.
Let's take another call. Bessie in Baltimore, you're up next. You're on with Sheila Dixon.
Hello. First of all, I want to say welcome back, Ms. Dixon.
Thank you.
I will be one of your voters.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Now, I wanted to, it's two things that I'm concerned about, and I know from your grassroots, the Block Watch. A lot of individuals do not, all the crime that's going on, a lot of them do not participate for fear of the retribution from the people who are committing the crimes. If we had a number that we could call when you see something going on and not be attached to it, but the forces, police forces could adhere to that, it would be great.
That's first of all, that's a great idea. But also with the Block Watch too, there is a number given to you. But you know what else? What I think, and I haven't even heard much about until you just brought it up in a while, is the police department working with neighborhoods and communities really promoting and pushing that where you have an identification number? You don't have to give your phone number or your name. It's an ID number that you give. I don't even hear a lot about the Block Watch anymore. So you brought a good point up.
What do you think needs to be done to restore trust between the community and the police so that people actually report crime to Baltimore police again, actually communicate with them? Kids don't grow up in fear of them in certain neighborhoods. I mean, this is a national issue.
It's a national issue.
This isn't just in Baltimore. But
it's an authority issue as well. And for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's because of the generations over the period of time, where in some cases young people have issues and concerns with respecting authority. But we also have to keep in mind that even though you're in authority, you have to be respectful in how you deal with citizens. And then also, when people do put complaints in, they need to see some results, not when just somebody gets shot and then the police shows up and they're in your neighborhood cruising for that week. It can be a small thing. It could be a theft, a break-in, whatever. People need to see that they're getting results. It could be a complaint where someone was approached a certain way. I met a young man who's a bike carrier yesterday, and he was telling me that he was pulled over on a bike because he had a nice bike, and the police said, well, there's been robberies of nice bikes in this area being stolen. He was thrown off his bike by police. He put the complaint in. He still hasn't given up on the police. But that was a good example where there should have been some follow-up with him and somebody communicating with him and showing apology. I mean, I'll give you a prime example. Someone hit my car while I was away this weekend. I had to get a police report to give to the insurance company. I called the district first, and then I had to call 911. But I called the district thinking that I could work through the district. And the person who answered the phone, and I was just trying to describe the story and give him the information. And then he started getting indignant with me. I never identified who I was. I just, you know, I don't want to do that. But believe me, I planned to call the major for that district to say that it was no need for that police officer.
You said you got indignant. Was it a tone of voice? Or
not only
he was annoyed that you were...
He was annoyed that I was asking a lot of questions. And then he then said, well, you know, telling me to calm down. Well, I was pretty calm. I had just finished working out, went to a boxing class, and I was pretty mellow at that point. But so all in how you approach. And I could have had a different personality in dealing with him. But I said, no, I'm going to be respectful, needed the information. But he didn't have to be so indignant. And then so I don't know if this is stress going on with our police officers, but if that's the case, we really got to address that.
When you were a city council president, you sat on the Board of Estimates. And as mayor, you sat on the Board of Estimates. And over the years, the city has paid out millions of dollars in settlements and court judgments in favor of people who were victims of police excessive force, police misconduct. Did you ever address that as mayor or city council president?
Well, I think that if you look at my record as mayor versus when I was city council president and we had the zero tolerance, the number of cases that came before the Board of Estimates, we worked on reducing that, and that's why our training is so important. So I probably, in my tenure, had less cases that came before the board than the prior administration and this administration.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to go look at that.
Well, take
but
a look
do you remember addressing it? I mean, I asked the present mayor that same question, you know, and then she talks about establishing the teachable moments idea for officers who get in trouble who are accused of misconduct.
Well,
but I wonder
saw,
if you sit at the Board of Estimates and you see these cases come, you know, the city solicitor brings them to you and you sign another one and there's another $1 million.
Well, no, you don't just sign it. You ask questions.
Well,
Yes. Oh, definitely.
And you wonder, you know.
And that's why in our plan, when I was mayor, we were addressing that to reduce the amount of complaints by working with our police office, working with the state's attorney's office about how they write reports. They went through a training. I mean, during that time, you know, there were challenges with the state's attorney's office and the police department. But one of the things that I made very clear to Pat Jessamy and Commissioner Bielefeld is we got to work through this together. And so if there are weaknesses that the police department has that causes these complaints to grow, et cetera, what can the state's attorney's office do to help us? And we went through a whole training process. And that helped.
You instituted new training for officers?
Yes, it was a diamond training that was conducted through the police department. And
okay.
That's something that's so important now.
Let's take another call for Sheila Dixon. This is Bernie in Baltimore. Go right ahead, Bernie.
Yes. How are you, Sheila?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. My question is one of the gentlemen earlier touched on it. The trash that seems to be all throughout the city. So, you know, my question would be, do you have a plan to deal with, some of the major problems and issues in the city right now? The one major issue is the trash all throughout the city. I'm not sure how, Stephanie Rollins plans to bring 10,000 families, to Baltimore with trash, throughout the city. It doesn't seem like a place where people would want to live. When you ride through the city and you see all of that trash all over the place.
All right, I appreciate the questions about trash. I want to ask you about crime because crime is so dominant right now in Baltimore City.
And grime goes together.
Well,
you have dirty areas, you have crime.
What would you be doing about this that's different than what we're seeing happening now? You're saying that there's no strategy. So what would your strategy be?
My strategy for what's going on now?
With the crime. With homicides, you know, three teenagers killed on Thursday night, more since then. As I said, robberies now at a five-year high in the city. You have a new commissioner in place, an interim commissioner, the establishment of a war room. You know, they have brought in some federal help. I mean, what would the mayor be doing now? What would Mayor Dixon be saying to the commissioner now?
what I would be saying to the commissioner now is that we're going to work on a strategy and plan that's going to be consistent all over the city. What we focus on, those targeted areas where the most violent offenders are. We're going to be tracking that. We're going to be finding out why we aren't taking those cases and following them all the way through to the end, because that's one of the strengths that Baltimore County has, that Baltimore City doesn't. They're able to solve a lot of their cases. So let's find out how they do it and why we aren't able to do it. Secondly, let's go back and bring back, on if it's on contract, some of our experienced officers that were pushed out that are needed right now, that know the city, that know the areas, the hot areas, that understand how to take a young police force and get them out there prepared to do what they need to do. Third, let's put that registry back in place, the gun registry. Let's go to those doors with our partners, with the sheriff's department. We had every public safety agency working together collaboratively. Let's go back out there at those homes where individuals are arrested for illegal guns. Let's find out what they're doing. Let's provide them whatever kind of services that they need to get them off of the street. I just did a tour with a group in this community on the bus, and we took the subway to the bus on 13 on North Avenue. Mm-hmm. We waited 40 minutes for 13 bus. During that 40 minutes, there were a number of individuals on that corner of North and Pennsylvania Avenue, and they recognized me, and I began to talk to them and vice versa. People don't want to be out there committing crimes in a lot of cases. They want a chance and an opportunity to do something different. One young man had gone through the test school program for his computers. He had just come out of prison. He had a skill. But he needed someone to show him where he needed to go in order to get a real job and get off of those corners. And so we've got to get on those corners. You know, I would have a mayor's mobile riding around the city in different areas with services that are going to help to assist those individuals to work with them.
Let's take another call. John in Baltimore, thank you for holding. You're on with Sheila Dixon.
Yeah, hi, Sheila Dixon. You know, I'm one of the supporters. I will vote for you, wholeheartedly support you. And I think you have an incredible opportunity to turn the city around in a way that others wouldn't. I've worked in reentry workforce development in Baltimore City for about 10 years. And this city needs to embrace those with a criminal record, those that need a second chance in a meaningful way.
Yes.
Not just fast food jobs and warehouse jobs.
Correct.
But allow these folks into our economy and our community in a meaningful way if we ever expect the city to be sustainable and attract those new residents. I think you have an opportunity specifically now to come back and get your second chance and make that front and center to your campaign and to your administration.
It is a priority. Are you still working with the mayor's office of training and
John, are you still there?
Yeah, part of it's all that, and that's been done for a while. But I think there's an opportunity in a more meaningful way.
You're asking for a second chance.
No.
He said there's a lot of people in the city who need a second chance.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly, and I agree with him that jobs and training has to be one of those areas that has to be a priority in moving forward, because there are great opportunities to be able to train individuals in many, many areas. I'll just take the construction area since I've been involved in this for the last 5 years. You know, we have to take different trades and start sooner than high school, but going to middle school. We have to take these programs and bring them and make them part of. I know the governor is going to tear down, I guess, the facility, the jail. That could be an excellent training facility for individuals before they come out of prison to be able to train them in different industry areas, not just IT and health, but construction, mechanical. I mean, there's so many areas where folks can get another chance, create their own business for themselves. But I agree wholeheartedly with you on that.
We're going to take another break
I'm working on a white paper on that
as
we speak.
Excuse me. We have to take a break. We'll come back. It's only 90 seconds. I will take some more questions for Sheila Dixon. 410-662-8780. Here's a question for Sheila Dixon off of Twitter from Stephanie. What is Ms. Dixon's opinion on building new rec centers with the proceeds from selling the city-owned Hilton Hotel? So there's one question, and then the Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake's proposal is to sell off three of the city's parking garages.
Have been working on a strategy in building new rec centers because we need new rec centers. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But we also could restore some of the old rec centers. And I do believe, and I did support the Hilton for a number of reasons, but I thought by now we would have been out of the hotel business and that we would have sold it sooner than now. And I think it's time to get rid of the Hilton. And
so you support the idea that Jack Young floated?
I support President Young's proposal and selling the hotel because we need to get out of that business. We're losing money every year. Initially, I supported it because of the whole jobs piece and the hospitality and the minority piece with the construction and the fact that there were no other proposals that weren't asking for even more money than it would have cost us to build it.
The private sector didn't want to build it.
No, they did.
They wanted more from the city.
Correct.
One of the plans actually
was almost lined in line with the cities using the bond money. But I figured we would have probably sold it maybe 3 years ago or more.
Yeah, I've pointed out to people that the need for that hotel was to serve the convention center, which expanded. Taxpayers put money into the expansion of the convention center. You needed a convention center hotel. You needed it back in the 1990s, and the city council voted a very large tax break for John Patarakis so he could build a hotel not next to the convention center but a mile away from it.
The Marriott Waterfront.
Correct.
Right. Under the Smoke administration, which actually...
And I believe you supported it.
Yes, I did.
Okay, so...
And it expanded that whole Harbor East, Canton.
Therefore, the tax breaks...
But, keep in mind...
Are justified. Now, I'm just asking you...
If Peter Angelos who had that property for over 25, 30 years...
You're talking about the property near the convention center.
I'm talking about where the Hilton was built.
Yeah.
Would have built something, and built the convention center back in the... Before the... Marriott.
But he wanted a tax break, too. They all come around looking for tax breaks.
But if it's a tax break, but keep in mind, from that, we do get taxes from the hotel, et cetera. But even still, if that would have been built back then, while the expansion was going on, I think the Marriott still would have been built. And I don't think we'd be in the situation we're in today.
Okay. And then we get to last year, the year before, and Michael Beatty, who helped John Patarakis develop Harbor East, coming around looking for more tax increment financing.
$380 million.
Yeah, more tax breaks from
Harbor
the city.
Point.
Yes. So where are you on all this? Where are you on support?
I'm not opposed to TIFs, but I'm also believe that when you provide a TIF, that you have to maximize that opportunity to do other development. And in the case of Harbor Point, the only way that I would have approved that one is if, and this is moving forward, if Harbor Point got the development, then the west side of Baltimore would have had to be developed as well. Some project would have had to been developed on the west side. You have to balance that. And you just can't give a TIF and not maximize something for the community overall. Of course, Living Classroom is getting a school, but they could have built a school on their own. But what about the overall community? I'm not even going to talk about the construction.
And they included Perkins Homes, you know, in their enterprise zone there, whatever it is, in order to benefit.
But how does Perkins Home benefit?
I don't see it.
I don't either. I had that conversation with the elected officials in that area.
Here's a question from the west side of town. What is Sheila Dixon willing to do about the slum mall in her neighborhood of Edmondson Village?
Oh, believe me, that's been an ongoing challenge.
There's the west side.
Yes, that's down the street from where I live. And part of what we want to see happen, and I agree, I mean, the Giants would not even have been there when I was a council person, I believe. I can't remember.
First Giant
that got
built,
developed.
It's the first Giant that was built in Baltimore City in 21 years.
And it was my effort to help to make that happen. With the shopping center, we need to get that from the current owners and really get a developer who can come in and create a area that's going to accommodate that whole from Catonsville down. I mean, that's what really needs to happen. And it's really, it's been a challenge dealing with the current
Breaks, you know, the tax breaks, though, for developers, people here have soured on these.
Well, but
I mean, there was so much opposition to it, and yet the city council supported them.
Well, but you also
we hear it here on the radio show. I get letters from people out on the street. People are sick of hearing about
the
city.
But you have to understand,
and it hurts
we don't
the
have
city.
A dollar, but we don't have any money to put in the pot. And we don't want to stop development, but you got to be able to maximize it where jobs are created, true jobs and opportunities are created. Harbor Point, I guarantee you, there aren't any. If there are, there's a handful of minority companies that are working down there because those are the ones who hire people who are ex-offenders, et cetera. I mean, being in this construction industry, I've learned a great deal. Probably a lot of people who are in the construction industry would not like to see me
I've learned. People who live in Baltimore City and need jobs are going to find employment at Harbor Point.
My point is that you have to create that opportunity. They built that. You know why they built? They're building the building.
Oh, the Exelon Corporation headquarters.
So the question is, how is Exelon going to help Baltimore City residents as a result? Where are there going to be opportunities? See, that's the part where at the Hilton, I hammered in on that and making sure people got the kind of jobs that they could grow in that corporation of hospitality. If we don't stay on these developers to maximize opportunities, then they're going to just go ahead and do what they need to do. And that's why you need someone that's going to dot the I's, cross the T's, and going to track them, not micromanage, but understand the details of what's going on and not just take someone's word at it. You've got to get involved.
And do you think the city has that in the Harbor Point deal?
No, they don't. I know that.
Okay. Now, there's some more emails here from people who say that they're not going to vote for you because of your conviction in 2010. Valeria says, it is not that I cannot forgive her, but I will never forget how she had that lapse of judgment. It is inexcusable to be in a position of power and abuse it for personal gain. And another one from Charlotte who says, that cites the same reason why she won't vote for you. And she cites questions about your judgment before the gift card episode, but going back to your time as city council president, you know, when your sister was hired and your former campaign manager got a job in computer services in the city council president's office. So you want to, toward the end of the hour here, you want to say again why people should trust you going forward?
Well, again,
or do you think that's a lost cause? Do you think these folks are a lost cause?
Well, no, I'm not going to say that. And they don't even know the entire story. And we don't have the time to go into it because I could.
We got time here.
Well, let me put it like this. My judgment and my some choices that I made, and that in some cases other people did, but of course I'm the fall guy for it. You know, I regret that every day. And I have to live with that. But I know how much I love this city. And despite what they think and what they don't know about me, I am a good, honest person. And I know that I could do a great job. And I'm sensitive about it because I would like to share with people so much more information that only so that they would get the real stories. But I'm not going to take that time to do it now.
You mean to defend yourself?
Yeah, not only to defend myself, but to put real facts out.
We have time. I mean, what did we miss?
No. We don't have time because you're talking about 10 minutes or 5 minutes of time versus sitting down and having a conversation about it.
About each of these things?
About all of that.
So you don't...
We don't have the time. It's because it's going to take more than a 10-minute conversation. I'm just being honest with you about it.
Well, you're saying we missed the other side of the story. I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, but we missed the other side of the story?
They don't know it, but you know what? That's fine. And I can understand there are people who aren't going to forgive me.
Okay. All right. Let's take another call here. Sharon in Baltimore, go right ahead with your question, please.
Hi, Dan. Hi. My name is Sharon Gornstein. I'm a school psychologist. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I currently work with high school youth in Baltimore City, and after the riots and the unrest, we did a whole lot of crisis intervention and focused on building leadership and giving young people voices and empowering them to express their concerns and desires. And I'm wondering, what would you see as some of the next steps to continue to do that work with our young people?
I mean, I'm glad to hear that you're doing that. And I just met with a young man who actually was working in South Baltimore doing something similar with the school. And after the riots, he got with the young people to find out what it is that they wanted to see happen. And he actually opened a center. And it's going to be an after-school center based on all the things that those kids wanted for their neighborhoods and community. But I think we have to have that ongoing conversation. I think what you're doing, first of all, we need more psychologists and psychiatrists in our schools today because of the challenges that our young people face today. They see so much in their communities and in their own homes that have traumatized them to, in some cases, not to have feelings and be sensitive and understand even right from wrong. So I think that dialogue has to go forth. I think that we have to not only listen to them and hear what they are saying, but we have to implement some things to help them in their recovery process as well.
Next call is Tristan in Baltimore. Go right ahead, Tristan.
Hi. Sheila, first of all, I'd like to state that I, for one, know you were set up with the gift cards. Nobody goes down for gift cards without some help. So don't worry. People know the truth. Secondly, I'd like to say I was robbed at gunpoint last night by a well-dressed, black male, well-spoken teenager. And he obviously had someone somewhere in his life that cared for him and had a stable job and was able to put him in those clothes and get him the education he needed. But it didn't stop him from pulling a gun and putting it to my chest, taking my wallet and my phone last night.
Oh, my God.
I think that there is a naive approach. There's a lot of education in the city. There's a lot of people, a lot of programs I've been hearing y'all talk about to try and help these people and empower them, as you say. But I think there's a cultural issue underlying here. With all this help, all they know is to stick their hand out. And a lot of the people that work with them in these programs, they only see these people when they have their hand out. They see the nice side of them. They don't see the evil side of them, like what we saw in the riots.
Do you want to respond to that?
I feel for what happened to you. I'm sorry. I hope that the police responded to you, and hopefully they'll be able to get the young man based on, you know, your description, because you obviously have that. I think that I agree. You know, I think we have to stop doing a lot of handouts, because we have to give people a hand up, and we have to show people that they have to be responsible themselves as well. And that's why, I go back to education. I go back to the structure of the family today. All of that plays a role. But keep in mind, city government, people think the city government solves and every issue that there are in the community, and we don't. But we have to work with organizations, we have to work with people, we have to work with families to try to get them to be able to address some of these ills and systemic things that affect us moving on forward.
Another call here. Everton, are you there? Go right ahead.
Yes, it's good to see you coming back, ex-Mayor Sheila Dixon. I'm glad to hear your voice. They prosecute you for gift cards. I mean, corruption is in politics everywhere you go. They spend millions and millions of dollars to do what? It makes no sense. I think you're a good person. You're good for the city, and it's glad to see you back.
Okay. Thank you.
Everton, thank you very much. And Gene, can you do it quickly, Gene? Real quick. We've only got about
a
minute.
I'm right by the station where you all are now in in Old Goucher, and I've been down here over a decade, and there's always
Gene,
been talk of
Gene, we're really
bringing
short.
People in from D.C.
Are we down to our last minute here? I'm sorry, Gene. Gene wants to know what can we do to reform the police so that there's more enforcement of laws such as
prostitution.
She mentioned prostitution. I'm sorry to cut you off, Gene, but we're short of time.
This is an interesting community to be in. My office is not too far
right
from
near
me.
Here, you
yes,
mean.
I'm right around the corner. So I see the prostitution going on. I see some of the centers that have drug treatment. And, we've got to take a different approach in just as some of my drug treatment programs alone.
We wanted to have a community court once. Remember that idea? Mm-hmm. When people come in for crimes like that,
you
have social services right there for them. To be
we
continued.
Need that also in schools.
Thanks for being here today, Sheila Dixon. Thank you very much. Short break here on Midday. Second hour coming up.